What's going on, people? Welcome to Paint Points. As usual, I'm your host, Jake Painting. This podcast is proudly brought to you by the SB Nation Podcast Network and the Canis Hoopers family. Trade deadline is gone. The Wolves have lost two in a row. Things are a little bit weird at the moment in the fan base with the organization. We are going to discuss all of that and whatever else comes to our mind. That is me and Jack Borman, Candace Hooper's contributor. Jack, panic button or no panic button?
No panic button, man. This team has way too much talent for me, and they're way too healthy relatively, and they have way too much talent for me or anyone else to really be pressing the panic button, but. I definitely think there's a palpable frustration among the fan base right now, and that's definitely something that I share, as we'll get into. But I think it'd be foolish to press the panic button right now, given where the team is at relative to the expectations.
Right, and I think the overall kind of undercurrents of a little bit of, not panic, but yeah, that palpable kind of tension and the feeling that this could, is kind of, I guess, balancing on a knife's edge, could go either way, I think stems from the quiet trade deadline and then the subsequent loss to, obviously, first to Sacramento before the trade deadline and then secondly to Chicago last night. How do you feel about the deadline? What was your, when that, you know, hour ticked over, what was your first feeling that kind of overwhelmed you in terms of, you know, them not doing anything at all?
Before I touch that, if I had $10 for every time that somebody's been in my DMs in the last, let's call it 32 hours, using the term good vibes in a sarcastic tone, I think I'd be able to pay for a vacation that I could go on for the rest of the Wolves season. But yeah, so I was doing all this live analysis stuff on Canis Hoopers, kind of tag teaming that with Kyle. And so I really wasn't thinking about the Wolves, to be quite honest with you. Like, there were all these deals that were flying in left and right. I was just kind of giving
my, just kind of waiting for the Wolves to do something. Then you'll think about it.
Yeah. Like I wasn't really stressed about it. Because I think last year too, we had this feeling where it was like, you know, guys like Doogie, you know, not shade to him like at all. But I remember last season too, if I remember correctly, he was saying that there was like a really, really strong chance that he felt the Wolves were going to do something. And I think this year he said it at like 85 or 90% that they do something. And I just didn't really, I didn't have high expectations for the deadline. Just because they have three second round picks this upcoming draft, in addition to holding their own first, which they can trade. And they own all of their picks going forward. And they have more second round picks, like they have a surplus of second round picks that they'll be able to move, not just this year, but in upcoming years as well. And, I thought that they would do something, you know, trading Lehman and Okogie for, maybe with a couple seconds to try and get a big guy in that $7 to $9 or $6 to $9 million a year range. You know, just because I think the situation with Nas at backup center, on certain nights is so untenable that it can lose them a game. And it's happened multiple times this year. As that hour was ticking by, I was just kind of waiting for a Wolves deal to come. I figured that, you know, a lot of these guys that the Wolves were reportedly interested in, you know, could have been a situation where, you know, a lot of times with guys that are like fringe first, give up a first round pick or give up 2 seconds or 1 second or whatever it is, like, you know, some of those teams might wait as long as they can to kind of drum up a market in that last hour before the, you know, the clock strikes 3 o'clock Eastern time. And so I figured if the Wolves are going to do something, it was probably going to come right down to the end. So, again, wasn't really stressed out about it. Figured they'd try and do something, wait for a price to come down on a guy. But, you know, that just didn't happen. And you know, here we are. And I think it was unfortunate that in those it was just the Chicago game was after the deadline.
Yeah, yeah. It was a 72-hour period where you had the Kings game, the deadline, and yeah, than the Chicago right. game.
And so I think it was a little unfortunate, and I think the way that they performed last night against Chicago kind of exacerbated some of those, you know, frustrations that people were having. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's important that people try and keep a perspective with all of this. Like, Sachin Gupta said during his media availability yesterday morning that, you know, he's not going to make long-term decisions based on short-term results. And I think that that had to do a lot with Taurean Prince and Jordan McLaughlin and Malik Beasley really playing well this last month. And I just don't think he felt comfortable moving those guys, you know, based on their value potentially being a little bit higher now than it was a month ago. And he talked a lot about how he just really didn't want to break up the chemistry that this team has. And I think that, you know, chemistry is really important, you know, when you face adversity. I think we've seen in a couple of games against Portland this year, especially, you know, that Wolves team last year of 2-3 years ago, they would just have no shot of winning that game. They'd wilt, they'd get punched in the mouth, and then, you know, just kind of turtle. And they haven't done that this year. And I think chemistry is a big reason why. And I think, you know, we can sit here and make fun of, you know, the good vibes and whatever that they didn't want to disrupt. But, like, Sachin Gupta is a really smart dude. And I trust that if he didn't feel there was a deal out there that made sense, given the opportunity cost of it, you know, I'm going to trust that that was what the best decision for the Wolves are because or was because we don't know what deals were out there. And, you know, he did say that they're going to be active in the buyout market and that we'll see the team probably try and sign someone. You know, the first week of March is when that, you know, the prorated minimum gets to a point where they could sign a guy for the rest of the season and not be under the luxury tax. So, you know, I think we'll have a better idea of what's going on there. But my best educated guess is that the Wolves didn't do something at the deadline because they know that they'll be able to get a particular buyout player when that time rolls around in a few weeks here.
I think that, there's so much to unpack from the situation. I think that, first of all, I don't think they have, not from what you were saying, but I think from what a lot of the feeling around the fan base is, like, they don't have many assets, man. Like, aside from those second-round picks, which I agree, I think that you could have probably packaged, you know, those and got yourself a replacement-level big with maybe a Cody or Lehman's contract. Even then, there wasn't a lot of those guys that ended up getting moved. Jalen Smith is probably one that stands out. Montrezl Harrell would be an absolutely disastrous fit on this roster. Like, we've got to the point where desperation, I think, is outweighing like logic when it comes to getting these guys. Moses Brown is a terrible basketball player.
And I think Gupta felt the same way. Like, he wasn't going to let desperation force his hand.
Yeah, like, I get that sometimes, you know, with a guy like Naz Reid, the old thing that you've already experienced can really start to feel a bit withered and you know, you get a bit fatigued of watching those guys. But we would all get fatigued of watching Moses Brown or Enes Freedom very quickly as well because they're worse than Naz Reid. Like, that's just
I'd be fatigued of Enes Kanter, Freedom, whatever the hell he wants to call himself. Before he
like,
even steps
foot as a
court.
Person, yeah. Like, if you're talking about, you know, good vibes and chemistry, which I think we both think is important, but also a little bit of spin from the front office. But if you're talking about ruining that, there's no quicker way to just fucking demolish it than bringing in Enes Kanter Freedom. Like, but I just think they didn't have enough assets to move for an actual, you know, real life impact player that's not a 10-minute off the nighter bench guy. Like, I don't think Malik Beasley is getting them that guy, and I don't know who that guy is who got moved. Like, Harrell's the only one who would kind of fit into that bracket, and he doesn't fit. You can't play Vando Cat and Harrell as your three-man big rotation. So I just think, as much as chemistry and good vibes is a thing and is definitely a factor that they took into equation, I also think that it's a little bit of management speak for, like, we just didn't have the assets to get a good deal done. And, you know, we're not going to say that out loud because that isn't good management. And we're not moving Jaden McDaniels. We're not moving any of the starting five. We're not moving Pat Bev. Like, the only guy they had is pretty much Malik Beasley or, you know, Layman or Cody. They probably wouldn't even move Nas because, you know, they still want him as a third big. So I think while the good vibes is important, I also think that they just didn't have enough to get a guy who would really impact the team on a positive level. And, you know, sometimes letting Jake Layman's contract expire or, you know, like rolling with Nas for half a season and then you could package those seconds for a first at draft time. You could package your seconds and a first to move up in the draft even further. Like, there's still plenty of options for those assets that they do have in the future, but they do have to have the opportunity cost of, I guess, rolling with Nas for this season and hoping that it works. And as we saw, especially I think in the last two games, sometimes that just really doesn't work.
Yeah, I'm going to push back quite a bit, honestly. You know, I think they absolutely have the assets to go out and get something done. You have all your first round picks. You have 3 second round picks in this upcoming draft, and you have a $13 million expiring contract in Taurean Prince. You have an actually impactful player if deployed in the right context in Josh Okogie on an expiring contract, and you have Jake Layman on an expiring contract. Like, you can't tell me that the Wolves don't have the assets when you look at the Clippers giving up Eric Bledsoe, Justice Winslow, a second round pick, and Keon Johnson for Robert Covington and Norman Powell. Like, I think that the Wolves had the assets to do something. I just thought that they felt that in order to, you know, make a trade that made sense for them within the context of what their team needs were, they would have had to move a guy like Prince or Beasley, and, you know, maybe they value those guys more than they should.
I think they value the first round pick more than they should. I
think this upcoming draft is terrible. I think it's going to be a terrible draft, especially based on where the Wolves pick is going to be. And to be quite honest with you,
yeah, like, but that first round pick gets more valuable still at draft time. Like, on draft night, you get more for the pick because everyone's desperate to do the thing on draft night where they want to get up in the draft. They want to get an extra pick.
That's definitely a fair point. I guess for me,
like, you get more for Malik Beasley and the first on draft night than you do 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago.
I don't disagree with that whatsoever. The only thing I will say, though, is, like, I think having an on-ramp with a player is pretty huge. Like, look at Chris mm-hmm. Finch last year. Like, you had half of a season on-ramp. Like, the Timberwolves are not sitting here at, you know, 29 and 27 or whatever they are. If Chris Finch was hired in, you know, May as Completely opposed agree. To last February. Like, that's agree. The only thing that I'd have is that, like, yeah, you worry about chemistry a little bit, but, like, Would have trading Malik Beasley really killed your team chemistry? I don't think so at all. I think trading Taurean Prince honestly would have been worse for team chemistry than trading Malik Beasley. But at the same time, like, you know, guys are going to get over that. Like, yeah. I'm not sitting here advocating saying, like, they should have done something. I don't want that to get misconstrued that I don't like
either of
those
guys. And I'm not the opposite. I think that they probably should have done something, but I think I'm just playing, like, devil's advocate.
Oh,
or maybe
for sure.
just try and get into the mind of Gupta on why they didn't.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that and with the way that – and so I was sitting on that Zoom for Gupta, and my impression, my takeaway from it was that he felt that the only moves that they were realistically pursuing were moves on the margins, and that he didn't feel that any marginal upgrade with a rotational player was worth the risk of shaking up a bench unit that has started to come together in terms of its cohesiveness on the floor, as well as one of the league's best starting fives, which mm-hmm. has fallen off a cliff of late. But, yeah, I think that that's the way to look at it. And I'd be really interested to see what they're going to do this summer because they have a lot of assets, and Malik Beasley becomes an expiring contract, I believe, because that third year is a team option. So, you know, depending on how he finishes out this season, it would not surprise me at all. Like you were saying, if we saw Malik Beasley in a first round pick trade at some point over the summer, but they'll do something for sure leading up to the draft, because they're not going to make three second round selections. I mean, I think you could see something similar to like what the Knicks did this past year, where, you know, they did a great job of packaging those picks to move up. They moved back with a first round pick and then were able to move back up in the draft. Mm-hmm. And I could see that being something that the Wolves do. You know, if there's one or two players that they're really interested in, and, you know, want to be able to recoup assets, while also getting those players, if, you know, they have a guy like 30th on their board and they don't think will go until 30, but they have like the 21st pick or something like that. Like, it makes sense to try and move back, you know, like, mm-hmm. I think we'll see something like that. But yeah, I mean, I don't think we can totally judge the trade deadline, in my opinion, until one, we see if the Wolves get a buyout guy, and if so, who that buyout guy is. And then two, to see, you know, where are the Clippers and where are the Nuggets? And where are the Mavericks, too? Like, Gupta thought that he didn't think that any of the moves that the teams around them in the standings made created a situation where the Wolves can't catch up to them.
I think he's probably right. The Clippers probably, in that little pack, probably came out of it the best.
Yeah, but I think that, I guess what he didn't know was that during his media availability was when Tim Connelly of the Nuggets said that, you know, he expects that both Michael Porter Jr. and Jamal Murray will be medically cleared to be able to play before the end of the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
And if they get those two guys back and the Wolves don't have like a two and a half, three game lead on the Nuggets before like the last 2 weeks of the season, like, the Wolves just won't catch those guys.
Yeah.
I just don't think that those guys are going to come back until they're 100% ready to play and like have had a bunch of practice time. And so I think that comment will be an interesting one to follow. But again, I don't think you can fully judge the deadline until all the context of those factors becomes clear.
I've got two questions for you before we move away from the trade deadline. One, does not doing anything hurt Sachin Gupta's chance to get a job? Another job, you know, to stay with the team? And are the Wolves even able to pry a buyout guy away from the bigger names? Because I don't remember a time in my entire life that the Timberwolves have signed a buyout guy. Like, I know they're better than they have been for most of my entire life, but, like, will a buyout guy go to the seventh seed and instead of, you know, one of the top teams who... The top teams just add talent, even if it's fringe talent, all the time. Every buyout trade season market, you know, like... Do you think the Wolves will even be able to get one of those top guys that they have on their list? And do you think that not doing anything is going to be the reason why Mark Lowry and Alex Rodriguez move in a different direction in the summer?
Yeah, I mean, I think the decision will be more Sachin Gupta's than anyone else's, if I'm being honest with you. Like, I wrote what I thought was a pretty well done piece a few weeks ago about how the Wolves were entering these, you know, pretty choppy, uncharted waters, and that there's a lot of organizational factors that play into the trade deadline. But it also applies to this upcoming summer. Like, I don't think that you can look at the introduction of someone like Marquise Watts as just like a throwaway.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Athletic does not pick up that story if that's not a significant move. And
yes.
It was reported in that story that you know, Watts has earned the ear of Lowry, and Lowry hired him. Lowry did not hire Gupta. And I would not be surprised at all if Marquise Watts eventually becomes a basketball decision maker. And given that I don't know if Gupta was consulted at all, in that hiring, or how well he works with him, or you know what the relationship is there. Because if there isn't a relationship, or Gupta wasn't consulted, like if I were in Gupta's shoes, like I would see that as like a threat to my job security, and that like yep. they obviously don't trust me. And so I don't necessarily think that it affects Gupta's job necessarily. Like I would imagine that some a pairing like Alex Rodriguez and Mark Lurie really want to make a splash, that they really want another star player. And I think with Watt's ties, I think you can go down the list of clutch clients. You know, they were in on the Ben Simmons space race there, and reportedly had the same offer on the table for months that didn't come together. And you can go down the line at looking at clutch clients, because I imagine that's who the Wolves might go after in the future. But so to answer your question about Gupta, like I don't necessarily think it impacts his job, you know, that much. Like Gupta is a guy who very, very clearly has his principles, and he's not going to compromise those principles no matter what. And I really respect that about him. You know, he's been around a lot of really fantastic basketball minds in this league between his stops in Houston and Philadelphia and Detroit. And honestly, I trust his judgment on that. And whether or not Mark Lurie and Alex Rodriguez also want to trust that, you know, that's a different can of worms. And frankly, I'm not that inspired by what they're going to do, if I'm being quite honest with you. Like Gupta would get, I think Gupta, if he chooses to leave Minnesota, which I think the chances of that are pretty good based on what I just laid out. You know, unless the Wolves really, you know, are able to get a buyout guy and do really well, like I would not surprise me right at all if he got a head guy job. Like he backed away from the Kings job because of ownership concerns, and it would not surprise me if he did the same thing here. So, and then what was your second question? I'm sorry.
Can the Wolves even get a buyout guy? Like, I don't remember them getting a buyout guy. That worries me, because it's like if they're putting all these eggs into the buyout basket, like, I don't think that there's enough eggs, you know, there to crack.
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to look at what teams have roster spots and what teams don't. So, I mean, the Bucks have roster spots. The Celtics do. The Heat do. The Sixers do. The Raptors do. Jazz, Nuggets, Warriors, Lakers, like all of those teams have roster spots or can waive a contract and still sign a buyout guy. So they're going to be competing with all those teams, but it's like, why would you want to go play with the Lakers if you were a buyout guy and you're not like a legit guy that can take them over the top? Like, I mean, I guess it all depends. Like, if it's a buyout guy who pretty clearly knows that he's going to get another contract this summer at a sizable piece like Goran Dragic, like, I think then you can go, you know, to a team where you're really going to try and win the championship. But if you're a buyout guy where, you know, like, you're still kind of fighting to find your way in the league, or, you know, you really need to be in a good position, if you want to make money on your next contract this summer, like it wouldn't surprise me if there's someone out there that sees, you know, okay, I'm going to have a ton of opportunity. I'm going to have a ton of opportunity in Minnesota to make an impact on this team. Like Greg Monroe as a guy that I think could very well end up here. Like, I think he fits really well in that, you know, he's a big guy that can pass. He's comfortable with the elbows. You can still run a lot of the same actions that you do with Cat, just not obviously using him as a shooter. So I think you could see something like that. But I mean, a Robin Lopez, like I don't think a guy is, you know, as well traveled and as, you know, well respected as Robin Lopez is going to be here. But yeah, I think a guy like Greg Monroe definitely, you know, could be an option. And I think the Wolves have enough talent on this team where you can go to a guy and say, hey, we're going to be playing in the playoffs, whether it's play-in or playoffs. Like, I mean, the Wolves are going to be hosting a playoff or play-in game this year. I feel damn confident saying that. And, I mean, you can sell that to a guy who also needs a good opportunity for a legitimate role, as opposed to, like, you know, a guy that might get used for like 5 minutes here and there every other game or whatever it is.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant, super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday, and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they have the cachet to bring people in, but I think it's a good point that you make there, that I've kind of been on the fence a little bit about. The problem with that is that even if they are waiting to the early March kind of period of the season, that means they have to deal with Naz Reid for now, or they have to find another way to spin this center situation. And for me, I'm kind of at the point where I just am ready to shut down the Naz experiment. Like, he's getting killed against real bigs defensively. Teams are really starting to jerry on that that's what they need to do to just, like, hammer the Wolves in those, you know, 6-7 minute stretches, is to play, you know, if they can find a way to play their starting center against Naz Reid, you can almost tear a game away from the Wolves in that period. I also think that he's a pretty major issue offensively as well. I think the tunnel vision that he gets. I mean, that game, Chicago last night, he missed so many passing reads when he had the ball. And, like, there's at least 3 backdoor cuts that Cat would make every time. And I don't expect him to be Karl-Anthony Towns, but, like, they're basic reads that all bigs should be able to make if you're at the elbow, is to hit an...
And Greg Monroe did a great job.
Right, right.
When he was here.
Jordan McLaughlin missed 2 of them that he should have got last night that were, like, really, like, they tried to top block him as he came, you know, came to get a handoff, and he cut backdoor brilliantly, and Naz looked him off and then went into a post move and missed the shot. Like, that...
Yeah, he had that one really nice UCLA cut that D'Lo hit him with,
yeah,
for a layup. That was nice.
And
he's underrated as a cutter.
Really good, like, yeah.
A guy that can catch the ball, yeah, in the paint and lay it in.
Those little UCLA cut plays that they run with him and D'Lo are so nice, as D'Lo, like, hits those passes perfectly. But back to Naz, I just think that, like, we've seen that he can play well, but even when he's playing well, the things that he does well kind of aren't what the team needs. Like, they need a guy who can play up at the level defensively. They need a guy who can try and up their rebounding rate. Like, you know, the team's 8.1 points per 100 possessions worse on offense when he's on the court. So it's not like, you know, you find, obviously that has to do with playing behind Karl-Anthony Towns, but it's not like you're getting this huge offensive boon from Naz Reid. Like, I just don't, at this point, I don't know what you're losing by going with Nate Knight, who I don't think is a very good basketball player, but I think he rebounds the ball better. I think he can play as a pick and roll player with D'Lo and J-Mac, and I think that he can, you know, at least be a bigger body in there. Or you go with Vando at the 5 when he's healthier and just let him, you know, fuck shit up. Or, you know, you go with, I think you suggested yesterday, like, just run it small with, like McDaniels at the 5 and just try and blast teams off the court. Like, try and find an identity in that bench unit rather than just having Naz out there who's really just, like, piling on to your current flaws. Right now, I think I'm just kind of done with the experiment.
Yeah. So last night, like you alluded to, I proposed that the Wolves run with a five of Jordan McLaughlin, Jalen Noel, Malik Beasley, Jaden McDaniels, and Torian Prince.
That's chaos. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, it's five guys that are really unselfish, move the ball really well. All five can shoot. I know that McLaughlin is only shooting 27% on 1-3 attempted per game, you know, since New Year's. But all of those other guys are shooting at least 35% from three on, you know, about three attempts per game or more. You know, and those are all guys that are capable of attacking closeouts and have shots that you have to honor. Like if J-Mac, you know, has a defender where that's not honoring his shot, like he's more than capable of putting it on the deck and getting past a guy or, you know, finding an open teammate or initiating some type of offense where you put a guard in a ball screen action or, you know, whatever it is to, you know, to offset that. Like if your guard that is really quick and can get to the rim whenever is the one guy that can't really shoot, like I don't think that's the end of the world necessarily.
Yeah.
You know? Your big guy is still going to be guarding Jaden or Torian, and those guys are going to have to step out onto the perimeter in guard.
And that whole lineup would get tied together by J-Mac, even though he can't shoot, because him playing with pace and playing with a lineup that can just thrive in you know, fast-paced action is exactly kind of, you know, what makes him tick.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, too, that, like, one thing that I personally think that people are overlooking with Nas is like Nas is not a good rebounder at all.
He's one of the worst big like center rebounders in the league.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
He has a lot of games where he plays like 15 minutes and gets one or two boards.
Yeah, like I think that there would legitimately be opportunities for Torian Prince to do better on the glass than Nas. Mm-hmm.
And Torian is a really good, like, low man. How, like, he's really good positionally and rotation-wise defensively. He does have, you know, he's slower than you'd probably like from a wing type dude. But, like, if you play him as a big, like, I would be pretty comfortable if you had, like, you know, J-Mac and Torian in pick and roll coverage trying to trap and hedge out there. And then you've got, like, you know, Jaden McDaniels coming from the low man. Malik Beasley's, you know, hit and miss as a low man. But, like, there's a lot of athleticism there to fly around.
And you can switch, too.
Yeah, which they've been doing a lot.
And the fact that they... I mean, that lineup still has a decent amount of length, too. Like, I think you could switch and switch a switch, too. Like, I think J-Mac is so fast that if you switch to pick and roll, like, he'd be able to fly out and communicate with somebody and get out to a guy on the perimeter if you wanted to get, like, I don't know, you know, J-Mac or McDaniels or Beasley onto a guy for, you know, part of a possession, and then just trust that your length is gonna come back. Like, do I think that there's situations where, you know, you kind of have to try and play Nas for a couple minutes just to see if he can hang with a really big or physical interior backup center? Sure.
But those situations, I just think, I know Nate Knight fouls a shitload, but, like, I just feel like if it's like Sabonis and he's game plan against the backup big is literally put him under the basket. Yeah, like just back him down for 12 seconds because he cannot handle you. Like, I feel like at least Nate Knight has a bit more like growl to him, you know, a bit more stand your ground.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. And I think that makes sense too. I mean, or I guess
in those situations, because I love
like,
your...
You need a guy with a lot of meat on the bones if, you know, the team you're playing has a backup five that, like, posts up a decent amount or catches the ball and attacks a decent amount. Like, sure, then you can, you know, have a quick hook ready if Prince or McDaniels is kind of getting beat up.
Yeah.
But I definitely think it's worth trying it, just considering, you know, the Timberwolves have, I want to say, the third most assists on threes since the start of the new year, which is like a 22-game sample. And a lot of that has to do with the bench unit, because they're driving and kicking really, really well. Mm-hmm. And they're making extra passes nicely. And guys are just making shots. And I think you lean into the fact that guys are making shots. And honestly, like, if you're not going to be able to stop anybody with Nas on the floor on defense anyways, you might as well lean further into the offense and go with somebody like a Jalen Noel, who has been really, really consistent offensively this year.
Such a weird year for Jalen, man. Such a weird season.
Like, I just don't think that you can keep switching off rewarding J-Mac and Jalen and not, you know...
punish Nas.
I don't want to say punish, yeah, but make him understand that there are consequences for not playing
the
defense.
Being rewarded.
I think that he's kind of been entitled to all these minutes that I don't necessarily think he's earning right now.
Yeah.
And I think Finch has very much been a guy that's like, if you go out and you do this one thing, you'll get another minute in the next game. Mm-hmm. And then that extra minute turns into two more or four more or six more if you keep kind of doing that one extra thing that he's asking of you. And Jalen kept doing all of those things. And, you know, I like that Finch rode McLaughlin because he was the hot hand and was playing really, really well. I don't think it was the wrong decision to put J-Mac in, but, you know, I think you gotta take Nas out at this point. Like,
and that obviously all comes back.
Especially if Kat's healthy, yeah, too. Like, yeah. you just...
And that comes back to that roster construction, because I'm sure if, like, reading the tea leaves, I don't think that Chris Finch trusts Nathan Knight in the slightest to be a rotation player. So I think if he had a guy there, a third big, a Greg Monro, you know, call it a facsimile of him, then I think you would have seen that same situation that's happened with J-Mac and Noel happening with Nas and said third big. But I think right now he just doesn't feel like he has the options. And obviously, for whatever reason, I'm sure they've thought about the small ball option as well. I'd love to see Vando at the five, even, you know, if you can, you know, just for 3-4 minute periods, if you get him out early with D'Lo maybe, and then bring back D'Lo and Vando, and just because I trust Vando when he's healthy, which we'll get to, but like
I think a trio of D'Lo, McDaniels, and Vanderbilt would work well. I think D'Lo's got a good chemistry with both.
Yeah,
of those guys.
Yeah, and they work really well offensively with D'Lo's passing as well, and D'Lo. I think Vando is the guy that kind of ties D'Lo's quarterbacking on defense together, him and Pat Bev. So, yeah, there's options there, but I'm just not sure that Finch trusts any of them, except, you know, I think he just is rolling with Nas more of a, you know, best of the bad bunch scenario. And that's the issue with the trade deadline, you know, coming and going. And not getting anything that gives Finch more options, maybe a less bad option.
Yeah, and I guess too, like, obviously you want to look at, you know, you want to look at only this season, but when you look at next season or the free agents this upcoming summer, I mean, just looking at guys who, you know, who are free agents, like you have Serge Ibaka, Bamba, McGee, Thomas Bryant. Andre Drummond is a free agent. Mitchell Robinson is an unrestricted free agent. You know, Isaiah Hartenstein, who's been really good for the Clippers, is an unrestricted free agent. Dwayne Dedman, like, all these guys are low cost backup bigs that, you know, play for these really good teams for the most part that, you know, are on a team that kind of have salary crunches.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you pay them close to the mid-level, or you pay them, you know, $5-6 million, whatever it is, to come to take a risk and get them to come play. Like, it'll just be interesting to see how they approach that, because they're going to have options this summer, and I think that Minnesota will be able to pitch to a free agent like, hey, we got this stud in Anthony Edwards, guy who is probably going to sign a supermax contract this offseason, Karl Anthony Towns. Like, it's a damn good core to play around.
Yeah.
Like, I get that like Milwaukee, like, until they like really, really started winning all these games and become a destination, but like, I think teams, like, guys will want to play with Anthony Edwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think that that's crazy, especially if, like, they're going to get an extra, you know, $2 million a year, than they would to play for a perceived better winner or whatever.
Yeah. And that is where the outwardness of good vibes and chemistry does come into your favor. Because if guys are looking on from afar right now thinking, where am I going to play next season? What team needs a backup bid? You know, what team looks like a good place to go and play? I don't think it's all about, like, where am I going to get the minutes or where am I going to, you know, win as many games. It might be like, hey, Anthony Edwards looks funny as shit. Like, they all seem to really enjoy playing with each other. Chris Finch looks like a really good guy and a really good coach. Like, maybe they should be on my shortlist. And I'm not sure that's at the forefront of what Gupta's thinking about when they're not making trades, but it is maybe just like a trickle down effect of keeping a team together and kind of building a core and building a culture around the team, because right now they haven't had a good culture for so long. And that is one of the things that, even if, you know, the sarcasm, like you said earlier, of the good vibes is funny, and it's sometimes a good excuse to, you know, to throw out when a team plays like shit. But, like, building a culture is super important, and Minnesota's culture has just been in the dumps for 15 years. So
not to be Colin Cowherd, but, like, it's almost kind of like, you know, you're dating, you're going on all these dates, like, you're just kind of like not really having a great time, and then you go on this date where, like, there's one thing about the guy or girl that just, like, bothers you, that, like, you know, is an issue, but everything else is great, and you had way more fun on that date than you've had in, like, the last seven that you've been on. So you just, like, want to go down that path, even though you know at some point there's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I kind of almost feel like that's what the trade deadline was. It was like, oh, we have this culture, but, like, our big rotation is kind of, like, not tenable. And, like, this is going to flame out at some point, but, like, let's ride the wave.
Like, she's really, you know, hot, but she's crazy.
Yeah. Or he's just, like, a muscle guy, but, like, kind of an airhead on yeah. some level, you know? Yeah. Like, it's just, like, I don't know. That's kind of where, like, I feel like the team is at, and I don't know. I'll be frustrated if this team doesn't make the actual play. Like, I'll be pissed if the team doesn't make the actual playoffs, but
yeah.
I think my realistic, like, expectation, adjusting for where the team is now and what we know about them, is, like, they should take a first round series 6 games if they don't
yeah.
win one.
Yeah.
I don't see a reason why they couldn't take Memphis or Utah or Dallas. I think they could take any of those teams 6 games.
Yeah, yeah, I think so too. I think that
they just have too much talent to walk in and just play like ass in the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah.
Or lose in the play-in.
The play-in's good because we're Minnesota Timberwolves fans, and getting an extra 2 spots is good, but I think it's really watered down, like, people's perception of, like, how well this team, like, now it's like, if you're in the play-in, you're good enough, but you're also a team that's, like, I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but, like, if you started the season without the play-in tournament and the Wolves came 7th, how much different would the perception be than right now when the Wolves are 7th and they still have to play this play-in tournament to get into the playoffs? Like, finishing in the playoffs, 2 spots in, not even as an 8th seed, as a 7th seed, would have been a tremendous achievement if we didn't have to worry about this play-in tournament potentially taking that achievement away from you. Like,
yeah, the only thing that I do like about the play-in tournament that I almost think gives some sort of advantage to the teams that are playing in the play-in is I think the NBA took a little bit from March Madness. Like, I don't know if you watch college basketball at all or watch the NCAA tournament, but, like, since they expanded the field from 64 to 68 and they have this first four, you're starting to see more of these first four. So how the first four works is, I believe there are 2 games in which Yeah, so there's one game that's like the winner becomes a 16 seed. So they play the number one seed.
Yeah.
And there's another game where the winner becomes the 11 seed and plays the 6 seed in one portion of the bracket. And the last few years, I think we've seen that 11 seed win the play-in game, the first four game, and then win their first round game in an upset. Like, I think that you can almost kind of create some momentum if you really just show out in that play-in game and just play really, really well. And to the players, that's a playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it's in actuality, like, to fans and in whatever, like, you see all these, you know, former players come out and say, like, this is not a playoff game. That is not the same as making the playoffs. But, like, to the players in that game, like, that feels like the playoffs.
Yeah, it's win or go home. And that's,
yeah, like, if you win that game, if you win that game, you're going to have more confidence going into whomever you play, especially if you're, like, the 7 seed going to play, like, a 2 seeded Golden State who knows what's going to happen with Draymond.
Mm.
Like, you're going to have more confidence than, say, if you just walk in there without any experience of, like, super high leverage games, and you have to play this dynasty team.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and I think that it's just so important to try and get the 6 seed, not because you automatically make the playoffs, but because there's such a huge drop off, in my opinion, between playing Golden State or Phoenix and then anyone else.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So, and not to mention too that, like, if Kawhi comes back or Paul George comes back, like, that's automatically the third best team. It maybe even the second best team in the West.
Yeah.
And they could be in the play-in game. And who knows? I mean, it just got reported a little more than an hour ago that Goran Dragic is going to get bought out by the Spurs here at some point and might go to the Lakers. So if that happens, I mean, that makes the Lakers a tougher out in a play-in game. Obviously, if Zion comes back and then you have CJ, BI, and Zion, like, that could be really tough to handle in a little two-game mini-series. So I don't know. The Wolves just have to have a sense of urgency, and so I don't really buy this whole retired bullshit. Like, the Bulls are down 4 rotation guys, and they essentially played a 6-man rotation last night, and those 6 guys have been playing significantly more minutes than the Wolves' top crew has. Mm-hmm. Because they've been down guys, and the Wolves were fully healthy last night. Like, yes, I know that Vando's not 100%. Okay, that's one guy that is not, like, damn near fully healthy. And Zach LaVine was hurt last night, too. Zach LaVine is not playing tonight because of a knee issue. Like, and you get out-hustled by them.
Yeah.
Like, and people, and, like, that was a bad loss.
Yeah.
Like, you can't have performances like that if you want to be a 6 seed. Like, if the Wolves end up getting the 7 seed and lose, you know, 2 play-in games and are done, I think you're going to look back at nights like this or that Pelicans game or, you know, the Mavericks game without Luka and Kristaps,
the Kings game,
you can't just be like, these guys just want to get to the All-Star break. Like, it's not an excuse. It's not.
Yeah, they might need the break, but they can't play like they are, you know, waiting for the break. Like, everyone needs the break. And I think the Wolves need it, you know, as much as any team, because I do think that they have a lot of guys who are feeling it in their legs. But I think it's more the mentality. It felt like they had conceded that until they get this break, they just can't win a game like this. And that's, like you're saying, like, right, that's not going to win you any games. If they go into this Pacers game next with that mentality, they're going to get waxed.
Well, and what was the first thing we kind of said before we started? Like, they're totally going to lose that Pacers
game. Yeah, we both think, like, they will. I will be betting on the Pacers.
I just don't trust them playing it in the afternoon.
And I think, like, we've seen it all season where they do have these lulls where, you know, they let things get to them for 3 or 4 games. And that kind of really starts to underline their performance, you know, the tiredness, the defense. At the start of the season, it was the half-court offense where it's like for 3 or 4 or 5 games, it just becomes so obvious and so untenable that it kind of throws everything for a loop. And then they kind of figure it out a little bit. But
And then guess who you play? That after that,
Charlotte, isn't it?
A home back to back. You have a home back-to-back against the Hornets. And Mantra, they got...
And they always beat the Wolves.
They got their shit ran against the Hornets in Charlotte right around Thanksgiving. And then they play the Raptors. The Raptors have been... I think they've won 8 games in a row. Hottest team in the league.
They won 8 in a row, have they?
A shitload of length. Just a hard team to play against. And they're playing against Toronto back end of a back-to-back. And if the Wolves want to keep complaining about how tired they are, they're gonna lose all 3 of these games. And they're going to be sitting at 29-30 going into the break. And if you win 5 in a row and then lose 5 in a row going into the break, like,
yeah,
you're entering the danger zone there, because then you got to play Memphis, Philadelphia, Cleveland, and Golden State. Those are your first 4 games out of the break.
You can't wait for those. They got to figure it out. You can't wait for these stretches where you've played OKC twice and Portland twice. Like, you can't just limp along until you get these stretches where you can, you know, sweep teams aside for 4 games in a row. That's not how you can do it.
Good on the Wolves for really winning a lot of these stretches against shitty teams. Like, they've done really well in these stretches. But, like, you can't just mail in the other stretches.
Yeah, exactly.
If they win tomorrow, I think that'll be huge, because then you're above 500 going into the break no matter what. Denver is banged up right now.
Yeah.
Dylan Brooks is still out for Memphis, and, you know, who knows what's going to happen with Dallas after this Porzingis trade. Like,
everyone's got problems, man. Everyone's got problems, and some of them are worse than the Wolves. Like,
almost every single team in the league has it worse than the Wolves.
I think this is the last thing I want to get to, and I know we haven't touched on the defense specifically much, so, like, I'll shift it to that. But the reason why the break is important for the Wolves, because you're completely right, is that that teams have it worse than the Wolves in terms of actual long-term injuries, not niggles and not guys who are playing through pain, guys who are sitting on the sideline. But in terms of the defense and whether it's fixable or whether it was just a pretty long illusion to start the season, I think they need Vanderbilt back to 100%. And like I said, I'm not discounting that other teams have their issues too, but, like, Vando is the main thing. They have other issues that the defense is doing, and like, I don't think him being healthy would, you know, have them as a top 5 defense or whatever in this last stretch of pretty poor play. But, like, he's the stir he's the straw that stirs that drink. Like, this defense can work without him, but then you're asking Pat Bev to do way more as a 33-year-old at the point of attack, and you're asking guys like Ant and Beasley and D'Lo to be ultra consistent as a low man. Like, that just doesn't happen. Like, Vanderbilt can play so many roles. Like, right now you're getting a hobbled and, like, ultimately pretty ineffective Vando, because he's a step slow on everything. He can't vacillate between point of attack, low man, post up, and then shut that shit down wherever he is. And that means everyone is a step slower, because, you know, they don't have him there kind of plugging the holes for them. D'Lo can't quarterback as well the defense, which we've seen lately, because Vando is the one who he's quarterbacking. He's the one who he points out, and Vando gets there, and everyone says, wow, look how good D'Lo did there. But, like, Vando is the one who's executing all of this. Like, Anthony Edwards can miss a low man rotation because Vando will come from the nail and stop a guy. Like, or he'll be at the point of attack, and the low man rotation will be, you know, 1 second later than it is now, because everything is worse without Vando at his best. And, like, he's laboring through 20 minutes max at the moment. The dude can't run up the court.
Well, he has a mid foot sprain.
Yeah, they're like 3 to 6 week injuries.
When I first saw that he had a mid foot sprain and that he was listed as questionable, like, I thought that was ridiculous, because, like, I mean, if you just Google it, it's like, it's saying mild midfoot sprains can heal in 4 to 6 weeks using conservative treatment methods.
This dude hasn't
patients
taken one
suffer
night
a severe
off.
Midfoot sprain may need at least 3 months to recover the stability and flexibility of the foot. So, like, who knows? Vando could be battling through this for a while.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I don't know how severe it is, obviously, but, like, you know, the Wolves have to figure it out. Like, I think, you know, McDaniels has been so good to his credit and has really grown on offense a lot and has stopped fouling for the most part on defense, at least at the rate he did at the start of the season. But, like, you know, the Wolves just cannot be a team that become reliant on one player here and there.
Yeah.
You know,
I agree.
The great thing about this team is that we haven't seen in years past is, like, you can point to all these different games and was like, this was the Taurean Prince game or the Jordan McLaughlin game or, like, the one of the Anthony Edwards games. Like, that's great. But that's not happening on defense. That's really only happening on offense.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it's interesting to see what's going to happen. Like, Dane said on his podcast last night that he asked Patrick Beverley, you know, what he was talking to his teammates about, saying, like, we've been asking for this and this is what we're doing, alluding to, like, switching more on defense. And, you know, I think that that is a good idea in a sense of, like, you're relying on Vanderbilt less, or you're acknowledging that, like, you can't be relying on Vanderbilt right now. But also, like, it puts guys in different roles. Like, D'Angelo Russell hasn't sat down and guarded the ball very much this year.
No. Like, every bad game defensively that he's had is when a team either has enough weapons or, you know, works their scheme well enough to get D'Lo at the point of attack, because he's so bad at the point of attack. Like, I'm more than willing to talk about how much he's improved defensively this season, but, like, that's because he's communicating and he's good positionally.
And he's really long.
Yeah.
People forget that he's 6'5".
His feet are terrible, like, terrible, terrible.
Like, yeah. That. Like, it's just, I think what it's going to come down to is how afloat the Wolves can stay while switching, honestly.
Yeah.
Is what I think the whole defense is going to come down to. Like, maybe they'll have more juice and they'll be able to run, you know, the more structured scheme that Papev talked about, you know, if guys can get a little healthier and whatnot. But, like, you know, when you get in the playoffs, like, the playoffs is a whole lot of you can't have two guys that are sieves defensively on the floor in the same time, because they'll just do exactly what DeMar DeRozan did last night in the fourth quarter. Like, are they going to miss zero mid-range shots like DeMar did last night? No. But all of those shots he got were good looks.
Yeah.
And good teams are going to get good looks every single time down the floor, and I don't care what the Wolves' offense is rated. If you can't figure out a way to get stops, you're not going to win, because your guys are not going to be making shots every night.
Yeah.
Like, it's just not going to happen. Like, even last night, for the most of the game, like, the Wolves were shooting terribly and were still in the game because they were forcing a ton of turnovers. And if you can't convert those turnovers into points, or you can't force guys to miss shots and collect rebounds, like, just not going to win. And hopefully, you know, in this switching concept, like, they'll be able to rebound a little bit better, you know, because hopefully that means that
more,
you know,
guys will be towards, you know, the rim.
Exactly. But, you know, who knows? I think that's their best path to being a better defensive team than they have been recently while switching, is rebounding the ball better. Because I think it is a little easier to rebound the ball in a switching concept than it is in a low man concept. Just because I think the Wolves can buy into this idea of gang rebounding.
Yeah.
But who knows? You know, there's a lot of questions.
And again, I think that not to keep kind of harping on this point, but I really do think it's important that Vando needs to get healthy. And like you said, I don't know how long is the All-Star break? 7 days or something? Like,
they play on Wednesday against Toronto. So I'll be there for that game. And then they don't play again until the following Thursday. So they have 7 days off.
So I don't know if 7 days is enough to heal this midfoot sprain, or at least give him a little bit more juice back. But, like, he's their best rebounder, maybe not defensive rebounder, but, you know, he's their second best, if not. And I just think that all that stuff you talked about is just easy. Like, he's the solid one defensively. You still have enough defenders. Like I said, this defense can work without him. The reason it's not is not just because Vando is hobbled. It's because guys aren't doing the right thing constantly. You know, Cat's been pretty bad the last few games as well. Ant has been in off with the Fairies since his knee started hurting defensively. I think he's preserving whatever energy he has for the offensive end.
I think Malik is getting lost off ball.
Malik is good. Malik is good when he's hitting shots. Always has been. Takes that charge as a low man last night because he hit a three before it. You know.
I think he's better as a low man than he is just like
on the ball. That's the problem, off ball above the break. That's the problem. All these guys have some good traits defensively. Like D'Lo's a good communicator. Malik knows how to play in that high wall. Steve got good hands, and like Torian's really good positionally. But they've all got huge flaws. Like Malik can't get through a screen to save his life. D'Lo can't.
Although I would push back on Malik not being able to get through a screen because I think if you broke down like all the different skills of all the ways Timberwolves players have improved this season, like Ant's 3-point shooting or Kat's driving or whatever it is, I think Malik Beasley getting through screens this year relative to what it was last year has been a massive improvement. Like, don't get me wrong, it's still not great, but like you can tell that he is really, really trying his ass off.
Yeah.
To get better on that.
Jokic just blocked an Anunoby for layup to win the game. An open layup. He came from nowhere to get it.
God damn it.
So again, things are just getting harder for the Wolves. Denver have just won another game. But like back to your point is I think that like I said, I think Beasley does everything a lot better when he's hitting shots, which is a problem. But they've all They've all got these big flaws as well as these big strengths defensively. And right now, the flaws are getting exposed. I don't know if that's just more time on the scouting report. I don't know whether it's because Vandover, puts out so many fires. I think Pat Bev all season has been a defensive playmaker and not like a lockdown point of attack defender. I think his legs are a little bit gone against faster guards, which there is so many of these days, but he can just do special shit defensively. Like he's just got the best hands for a point guard defender probably in the league. And like he just does, he makes plays defensively. I think Vando makes every single possession count when he's playing well, and does all the little things that help everyone else. So I think they miss Vando. That is what I'm getting at. But I also think, in conjunction with that everyone has to do their job a bit better. Chris Finch probably needs to scheme a little bit better. Whether that means, taking it back to basics like Dane spoke about and like Pat Bev spoke about, I'm not sure. But I think that this isn't... I don't think the defense was an illusion. I think the defense is fixable, but...
And I think Kat's activity and the way that he's been, activated in an optimized setting based on his skills and what he does best has been huge. Like he had a few holy shit defensive plays last night that we're just, I've been getting all year from him that weren't there in years past. Mm-hmm. And I think it's good to know that Kat is not the problem.
Yeah, I think Kat
has a bright spot. I think Kat
has
a lot
a lot more holy shit moments, like you said, but I think in the last few games he's also had a lot of like, come on, Kat moments, more than we've seen this season, because this season I've said very little come on, Kat, about his defense. Like, I think again, it's a shit excuse, but he just looks tired as well. Like, there was just a few times where he couldn't get up the floor, or he couldn't, redirect and get back to the role man the way he has been season.
Sometimes he's late getting up the floor because he's too busy bitching at the refs.
Don't even get me started on that.
But, I mean, I don't know. I just have zero sympathy for the whole "we're tired" thing, not because I don't believe that the guys are tired.
Exactly, I'm there with you. It's worth pointing out that they look tired, but it's not an excuse for losing.
Especially because there are so many teams in the league that they're playing right now that have so much more reason to be tired and for it to affect them.
Denver, the team that just beat,
keep letting it affect them more than the other team has.
Like the team that just beat the scorching hot Raptors in Toronto, in a close game that required, grit and mental strength and all those buzzwords. Like that's the stuff that right now the Wolves just don't seem to have. And they've been good kind of as a team for a month. So I don't want to discount the fact that they've had a good 2022, but if we're talking about like the last week or two, even in those wins, they just haven't really seemed to be, all they can be, I guess.
Yeah. And, you know, they've got three opportunities to figure it out. And I think tomorrow is by far the easiest one. But, like, you know, if they don't show up, like, I have full confidence that the Pacers can cook them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Pacers have scored 113, 112 points their last two games against the Hawks, who have just been terrible defensively, and the Cavs, who obviously are a very good defensive team. So, you know, and then, you know, and before that, they went on a string of scoring over 100 in like 10 or 11 straight games. So, like, and not just over 100, like damn near over, you know, 110, 113 points in most of those games. So, like, you know, they've got to figure it out.
The funny thing is, I think if the Pacers score 112, I'd probably be pretty confident that the Wolves will win. It's if the Pacers score 125, saying, like, that's the problem. And that could very well happen.
Yeah. I mean, well, they had, what, 47 points in the first quarter yesterday?
Yeah. And
almost, Tyrese Halliburton.
They had about 40% of their points in one quarter because Cleveland just started to lock shit down towards the end there.
Yeah. I mean, but you think about it, like, you know, they've got Buddy Hield, who's been a Wolves killer.
I'm not looking forward to watching him in a different uniform.
Yeah. I mean, and you have Halliburton. Like, those two guys were two of the team's, you know, three, four leading scorers and played really, really well. I mean, combined between the two of them, they shot 8 of 16 from three, and they shot, I don't know, like 15 of 32 from the floor or something like that.
Yeah. And they already know each other. There's no, you know, kind of new team trying to figure out what to do. Like, at least Halliburton has Buddy Hield, who he's played with for 18 months. And
yeah. And I mean, they're going to play a team that's going to play a 10-man rotation. I mean, they have Tristan Thompson now. And, you know, Tristan Thompson's another big body that,
I feel like he's killed the Wolves in the past as well, but maybe that's just like, I feel like everyone at some point has cooked the Wolves.
They don't have Miles Turner. They traded Caris LeVert. So really, it's going to come down to that perimeter defense. Like, if you can slow down Halliburton and then one of Buddy Hield or Chris Duarte, like, they should have no problem winning the game tomorrow.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's going to be really tough for them to lock in a road game for a team whose fans are probably much more re-engaged after this trade. It's a weekend game. There's going to be a lot of fans there, I'd take it. So who knows? Like, if they come out with even remotely close to the same energy they did last weekend against the Pistons, they're just going to get absolutely trampled. Like,
forgive me for my horrible knowledge. I know people will probably sigh at this, but is tomorrow Super Bowl Sunday?
It is.
I wonder just, you know, how that early, because it's an early game, isn't it? So that people can watch the Super Bowl.
So it's at 2:00 Minnesota time, and the Super Bowl starts at 5:30. So you'd have plenty of time to get home after that game.
Yeah.
Before the Super Bowl. Like, who knows? But, I mean, Indiana's, you know, one of the most supportive basketball states in the country.
Right.
I mean, you'd be surprised. Like, there are high school teams in Indiana that play in like 7,000 seat venues that sell out every game.
And we've seen firsthand what a trade can do to a fan base. Like, you look at those games after D'Lo and Malik got traded to the Wolves. Like,
oh, that Clippers game was
and like
crazy.
Not only the on-court product, but like the people there were raucous. Like, there was packed crowds. And that's, you know, on a team that was terrible, just like the Pacers have been pretty terrible this season. So, like, I expect the Pacers to have a lot of energy both on the court and in the building. And the problem is that I feel like Minnesota haven't had energy lately, and that seems like we're hurtling towards a disaster.
And it's going to be on Cat. Like, Cat, there is no excuse for Cat not to have a crazy good game in this game.
And I think really can suck the life out of a crowd, Anthony Edwards. If he goes on one of those 15-point scoring streaks, like, he's the kind of guy who can sit a crowd down.
Yeah, I mean, but he's the guy I'm most worried about, honestly, because his sleep schedule is just, like, very reliant upon getting that nap in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Because he'll stay up till, like, 4 or 5 o'clock playing video games, doing whatever. And it's like, not to say that I didn't do that when I was 19.
What do you mean? Like, you still do that now.
No, I don't really last much past like 1 o'clock.
Yeah, I was up till like 2 last night, and
that's gonna be tested though. I'm going to Phoenix for 3 days and Vegas for a week.
You might need that. Well, if the Wolves keep playing,
I might die.
If the Wolves keep playing badly, you might need Vegas to reset yourself.
Oh yeah, it'll be interesting for sure. But yeah, I mean, I think there's no reason to press a panic button right now, in my opinion. Like I said at the top,
but are you hovering over it a little?
I think there's a cover on it, right? You know, there's cover over the big red button. I think you start thinking about uncovering the button if they lose tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, if they lose tomorrow, I mean, you're just fighting an uphill battle against the Hornets and against Toronto.
Tomorrow just seems like a really nice buffer game. Like, get this win, give yourself a little wiggle room, you know, get into the break at 500. Even if you lose the next two games, it's not a 5-game losing streak. You know, like, it's just... It seems ultra important, this game.
Yeah. I mean, and the nice thing for the Wolves, too, is like when they come out of the break, they have 2 home games. Like 3 of their like, so I said, those first 4 opponents, Memphis, Philly, Cleveland, Golden State, they're at home against Memphis, Philadelphia, and Golden State. So, you know, they'll have some good momentum here to build on that. And then after that, you're at Oklahoma City versus Portland versus Oklahoma City at Orlando.
I've never seen a schedule like the ones the Wolves have had this season. It is literally it's like 4
gauntlet easy.
Yeah,
gauntlet,
like just give us the fucking Pacers and then Golden State and then Orlando and then, you know, like give us some games where you can just go win one, lose one, win one, lose one.
I think a lot of it honestly had to do this season. The schedule had to do with COVID.
Yeah,
I think that they were worried that COVID was going to linger. And so they have a lot more of these like home and home type of things. And that's just become a lot more common in recent years to try and reduce the amount of travel that the teams have over the course of the year. But it's happened even more now, I think with COVID. But yeah, all I will say is that once they get past that stretch, they've got one more tough stretch at the end of March. And then there are 4 games coming home should be somewhat easy.
Yeah.
You have Houston, Washington, San Antonio, Chicago. You go, I mean, there's going to be opportunities for the Wolves to make a run, in my opinion. It's just going to come down to...
If you go 3-1 in those last 4, you might be able to sneak a 6th seed or at least, you know, cement a top 8 seed.
The opportunity for the Wolves to make a run, like they have an on-ramp kind of with, you know, that OKC, Portland, OKC, Orlando stretch. Like, then they're at Miami, San Antonio, and Los Angeles before playing Milwaukee, Dallas, Phoenix, Dallas, Boston, Toronto, Denver. That's a hellish stretch, but you have an on-ramp before that. Yeah. So, like, you can build up some momentum.
All it takes this team to kind of lock back in, and, like, I can see them beating Charlotte, I can see them beating Toronto, I can see them... You know, I can see them games being wins as long as they figure something out. You know, as long as they lock back in. Because we've seen all season they can beat anyone, but they can also lose anyone. Because they're a 500 team.
Streaky.
They're a 500 team,
they're
and streaky. A 500 team will win and will lose the same amount of times. It's almost as simple as that.
But the nice thing about the Wolves, in my opinion, is that I don't think how well they play is necessarily predicated on how well they shoot.
Yeah.
In the sense that, like, if they control all the controllables outside of how well you shoot the ball, if you play really hard defensively, if you're unselfish, if you're forcing turnovers, like, you're going to be in the game no matter what.
Yeah.
And that's what we saw last night.
Yeah.
Like, even though they got trounced in the fourth quarter, like, you're still there. And you can hang around long enough to, like, you know, if a few of those shots start to go down, like, the game is very different.
Yeah, they had no business being in that game
statistically,
in the third, but all it felt like, all right, like if Minnesota are the ones that get hot here, they might just win this. It turns out that Chicago were the ones that got hot and that Minnesota kind of crumbled, but like that they have this identity of forcing turnovers that gives you a pretty high floor. I think that like if you are a team that just forces a shitload of turnovers, and has two all-star level scorers. Like, you have maybe even three all-star level scorers. You know, you have a pretty high baseline, even if it's not always going to be, you know, you're not going to be a 50-win team, but I think that you can compete pretty much any night as long as that identity doesn't completely, you know, fall apart.
And another way to look at it kind of is, like, it doesn't take much for that match to get lit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And they've got these role players where it's like, if you get 15 points from Jaden McDaniels, if you get, you know, a Vanderbilt night where he gets 7 or 8 dunks in a dunker spot or as a role man, like, you'll win that game. If you have Jalen Noel, if you have Jordan McLaughlin gets, you know, 8 and 8 for a game, like, it only takes, like you said, it doesn't take much to spark that match in terms of, like, other guys helping you win. And that's, again, I think they have a really high floor and a pretty low ceiling. Like, they're just a team that I think will win as many games as they lose. And you know what? I'm pretty happy with it, to be honest. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's about perspective too. Like, you got to think about, you know, if in October I said we'd be here at this point, you'd be like, yes, I'd take that every single day.
Yeah.
And I think from here, especially in these next 3 games, but I think it holds true for the rest of the season too, is that, like, I think to this stage we know what guys play well together, whether it's 2-man, 3-man pairings or 5-man pairings. And I think it's going to come down to Chris Finch, who, in my opinion, really knows his players well. It's going to come down to whether or not Chris Finch can press the right buttons at the right times and have hard conversations with players that need to be had. If guys don't bring the juice one night, or, you know, if there's some guys that you need to have a shorter hook on than others, like if Nas is really playing poorly, don't be afraid to go to, like, another lineup that we've seen that works without Nas in it, you know? And then, too, it'll come down to, can you steal a minute or two in the second or third quarter so that you can get Cat back in at, like, the 10-minute mark of the fourth quarter as opposed to, like, 7:50.
We didn't even talk about that, but that's just becoming so apparent that, like, Cat cannot come back. You cannot go a 4-minute stretch in the fourth quarter without Cat on the floor.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily think it's because, like, other coaches are getting their star players in that, like, 12-minute left to 9-minute left range. He's just getting cooked mostly by bench guys.
Nas is just not playing very well. He's not that great to begin with, and he's playing a lot worse than that.
Right. And so that's why I think it's just going to come down to Finch in terms of, like, can he press the right buttons at the right times and know that, like, okay, this guy's just really not giving me a good chance to win, so I've got to go do something. I've got to go to something else.
Yeah, I'd love to see some Edwards and D'Lo minutes in the third to get Cat an extended rest in at the end of the third, and then play Cat for the last 12.
Yeah, and some people have said, you know, well, why do you play Cat for the whole entire first quarter? Why don't you, you know, take off a minute here or there? And in my opinion, that's not really where it needs to come from. Like, Cat has played the whole first quarter for the better part of, like, the last few seasons. It's something he's comfortable doing.
And he dominates. He dominates when they bring in the bench big against him. That's why.
Correct. Like, and it helps him get in a rhythm for the rest of the game. Yeah. And I think if you're going to steal, or if you're going to try and find 2 more minutes or 3 more minutes for Cat to get on the bench so that, you know, find 2 to 3 minutes you can replace with that fourth quarter rest. You know, I think that it's got to be somewhere in the second and third quarters where, like, your bench is really rolling.
Yeah.
Like, I think Finch should be more than willing to let a bench unit roll if that means buying a few extra minutes on the bench for Vando or Ant or Cat or D'Lo or whoever it is, especially against teams that you really need to get a win against. And I think that's going to be an interesting development to follow for sure.
Yeah, and we will follow it. We will follow this team. We will kind of ride the highs and ride the lows. And right now, I think we're in a little bit of a valley, but there will be peaks again. Jack, have you got anything coming down the pipeline, you know, that you've been working on, or is it all just kind of day-to-day grind at the moment?
You know, it's a lot of day-to-day stuff. And there's been a lot of stuff that's been going on with the links as well. And I've been trying to make sure that gets, you know, some of my time as well, cause that's important. I don't have anything necessarily coming down the pipe that I know about, but, you know, I'm sure that we'll get a few more columns in before the end of the season. And I'm sure that, there'll be plenty of time for me to work on stuff during the All-Star break. So I'm sure that you'll see a couple of different things from me, over this All-Star break.
Yes, indeed. He is JR Borman 13 on Twitter. I am Jake Painting on Twitter as well. Go over to howsandgrouse.substack.com for all my stuff. You know what the go is, and I will see all of you guys next time. Peace, Jack.
Thanks, man.